the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the Magical Worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 70 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Hey guys, this is Ed, and this week we've got a great interview for you. But you know what? Let me let Jimmy tell you all about it. Take it away, Jimmy.
This is Jimmy, and this week I have Sam with me. Sam, how's it going?
Outstanding, Jimmy. Thank you so much.
This week we have the distinguished honor of having Mr. Lynn Testa on with us. Lynn is the co-author of The Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World, co-host of the WDW Today podcast, and the head guy in charge over at touringplans.com. Lynn, how's it going?
But pretty well, Jimmy, but I think my staff would be surprised to hear you say the guy in charge at touringplans.com.
Oh, yeah?
I'm the figurehead. I'm the pretty face.
Well, somebody's got to be the pretty face.
We have a pretty voice here at the Disney Nerds, and that's Jimmy.
Right.
How's it going, Sam?
It's great, man. And I tell you what, Van Halen fan, Steeler fan, we could talk about that, but we'll move right into the good stuff.
I'm gonna go see Eddie in D.C. I got an extra ticket, February 12th. Come
in
on along.
In D.C.? Oh. That's not far from me, actually. Wow.
All right. February 12th.
Nice. We'll call that We'll call that a mandate. Lynn, let's start this off. Again, we kind of talked about, touringplans.com. And for our listeners who don't know, as long as we've been recording the show, touringplans.com has come up and the Lines app has come up on more than one occasion on our show. I use it. I use the app certainly every trip we go down to Disney World. And I always use the website more for the crowd calendar than anything, than the actual specific touring plans. But I definitely use it as a reference before every trip. So for our listeners who are not aware, exactly what is a touring plan?
So a touring plan is a step-by-step itinerary that tells you when you should go to each ride to minimize your wait in line. And so if you tell touringplans.com, here are the 20 rides I want to ride in the Magic Kingdom, we'll tell you the order in which you should ride them and when to minimize your wait in line throughout the day. And it's an incredibly complicated scheduling problem. We have tons of computer power in the background that crunch through millions and millions of pieces of data. It was the subject of my master's thesis. I got a U.S. patent on it. It's the thing we've been doing for the last 15 years. So a lot of science, a lot of technology, a lot of statistics go into making that touring plan. But they tend to work out really, really well. You can save 4 hours in line on a busy day using the touring plan.
And that's fantastic, because while in Walt Disney World, time is money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about it. You're paying probably $10 per hour per person to be in the park. So, a family of four, $40 an hour, that's a lot of money. I mean, that adds up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, but it's worked out really well. We started doing the touring plans on the site back in like 2002, 2003.
Wow.
We started selling subscriptions in 2005. Last year, over the past 12 months, we've had 120,000 subscribers. We have more than 5 million people using the site in a given year.
That is
it's big.
And that's incredible. It really is. One of the things I think about when I think about a site like that, or just the whole idea behind it, is for the guy who's wanting to take his family down for the first time, there's a lot of material that you can get your hands on, and a lot of opinions.
Yeah.
But that type of information, the information you provide, could make the difference on whether or not that family has a really good time on vacation or a terrible time on vacation and would never want to go back.
Yeah, the and that's one of the reasons why we developed the computer software. We've always had these, you know, the touring plans in the back of the unofficial guide. You know, in fact, that's where they were developed first. But, you know, with all the technology that's available now, the fact that everybody carries a phone, that was really the driver for us to put the software on the phone in the form of our Lines app. So let's say you're going through Disney World, you know, and you might have a general idea of what you want to see and what you want to do, but you guys have done this. I mean, something happens. Your kids get tired. You get tired. You want an ice cream break, even though your touring plan doesn't say it's time for an ice cream break, right? And you go do it. So one of the things we actually did with the touring plan software, and this is the thing that people love, is whatever you need to go do. You want to go ride Haunted Mansion again? Go ride Haunted Mansion again. You want to take an ice cream break for half an hour? Go take your ice cream break for half an hour. You want to go find your lost shoe that's over in Tomorrowland? Go do that. But whenever you're ready to start touring again, we actually put this button on the app called Optimize. And what it'll do is you push that button, and it'll figure out what the best thing is for you to do from now until the end of the day, no matter what just happened. So it's kind of like a recovery button. Like whatever just happened, right? Kids just had a meltdown. You know, you needed a break. Everyone needed a snack. Whatever, that's fine. Go do what you need to do. When you're ready to start, you know, riding rides again, push the button. We'll tell you where to go next to minimize your waiting lines for the rest of the day. And stuff like that is kind of magical because, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you couldn't have done it, right? There's no way you could have done that. If you had a touring plan and you somehow got off schedule, you'd pretty much have to wing it from that point forward. But
when you were talking about it, the thing that came to my head the most was like your navigation in your car.
Yeah,
and you take a wrong turn, it's got to recalculate.
Yep, and that's almost exactly the same thing. In fact, when I'm trying to explain it to people, I'm like, it's like a GPS for theme parks. Just do it that way. Yeah, it's kind of cool, and it's nice. We get tons of really good feedback on it. Oh, a side note: did you guys see we started faxing room requests now to Disney?
Oh, no.
All right. So, did you guys see this is completely tangential to the touring plan software, but one of the things we did back in 2012, we were kicking around this idea of trying to answer questions because we get 5 million users. We get lots of email, lots of questions, right? And one of the questions we got most was, what room should I pick at, you know, Grand Floridian or Port Orleans or whatever? And we're sitting around one day, it's me and Bob, we're sitting in a restaurant, we're drinking some beers, we're trying to figure out how do we do this? How do we answer this question automatically? And one of us said, you know what we should do? We could just take a picture of every hotel room in Walt Disney World, and we could just put it on the web and let people figure it out for themselves. So, and Bob's like, yeah, you know, it'll never happen. Or I'm like, it'll never happen. Then we started thinking.
Not every type of room, every room.
Every single 30,005 rooms.
Okay.
So we're talking about it. And I'm like, well, and you know, first of all, we're like, well, that'll never happen. And then, you know, we're drinking a little bit more. We're eating. Oh, we're at Portobello's, you know, the Italian place in downtown Disney.
Sure.
So we're sitting there, we're eating meatballs. We're drinking meatballs. And we start thinking about it. I'm like, well, you know, if you could take, you know, 300 photos a day, that's really only 100 days worth of effort. You could do it in 100 days, you know. And if you could do 1,000 photos a day, which is a lot, we had no idea. So we sent out our photographer, and we're like, okay, dude, just take photos of the view you get from every room at Pop Century Building 10, and tell me how hard it is. And the dude comes back like, you know, 4 hours later. He's like, yeah, this is doable. So we started doing this project. And the project was that we call it Hotel Room Views. But we took photos of the view you get from almost every room in Walt Disney World. And Disney cooperated with us. They gave us a ton of access. They were super great about a lot of things. But we have pictures of the views from all the values, all the moderates, many of the deluxes. There's a few rooms we couldn't get into, and we have to approximate stuff. A couple of the villas were difficult to get into. But yeah, 30,005 photos. So one of the things is, you know, we give you this map of let's say the Polynesian. We'll give you a map of every building. You click on any room in any building, we'll show you the view that you get from exactly that room. Not a simulation, but that exact room. And then we'll show you, we were telling you, if you wanted to ask for this particular room from Disney, here's how you would ask for it. And we worked with Disney and they told us, for example, I don't know if you guys know this, but Disney's internal computer system that that does room requests, they only have 80 characters. They've only got one line for you to specify the room you want. So, you know, if you write this two-page fact saying, you know, it's my birthday and I'm coming from New Jersey and, you know, never been to Disney World before, yada, yada, they have to condense everything that you write down into one line. So what we did is on every photo of every room, we said, you've got 80 characters to give to Disney to ask for the specific room. Here's how to do it. And we listed out the text you need to say. And then we took it one step further. And this year we started faxing the room request into Disney. So if you tell us your Disney reservation number and your name and your check-in date, 5 days before that, we'll actually fax it to Disney. And it's been immensely successful. It's actually worked out really, really well.
Really?
Not 100%, yeah, but at a very high percentage, I'm getting very good feedback from people who are saying, I either got, you know, exactly my room or I got the room right next to it because, you know, it's one of the alternatives that we listed. I'm super happy with that. But think about that again. I mean, we're storing 30,000 high-res photos on a server, and we have an automated fax system, and you can look at this on your cell phone, right? Or you can look at this on your iPad. 10 years ago, this wasn't possible.
Absolutely
now it's
not.
Like it's almost all automated now, right?
I was thinking, you know, before digital photography, how much that would have cost to take pictures of 30,000 rooms on film.
It wouldn't have been done.
I mean, and then you would have had to have, you know, scanned it in, and actually, you know, what is funny, the two hardest things in that project were coming up with a naming system for the photos.
Sure.
You know, like how do you indicate all three? And then drawing the maps of every individual room. That took 6 months.
So that was going to be my question, Len. So you have these pictures, which I'm assuming you're standing in front of the door and taking a picture of the view? Is that
so? So for all the values of moderates, yeah, the view that you get is essentially the view that you get from the window. So
okay.
You're not sitting in front of the door, but you're standing in front of the window that's next to the door. For like the DVCs, you know, where there are any room where there's multiple windows, you actually have multiple photos that you could look at.
Okay, so that makes sense. So if the biggest question that we get and we see in the Facebook group all the time is which room, based on wanting to be close to a bus stop and close to a food court and close to – do you take that into account as you figure this out?
So you can actually we set up so again, Disney gave us this information. They're very good. But you can – just like on Expedia, you can filter for certain things. So you can say, show me all the 2 queen bedrooms within a 5-minute walk of the lobby and a 5-minute walk of transportation that are on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the noisiest, 1 being the most quiet, you know, a 1, 2, or 3, and so on. And we'll find you all of those rooms.
Nice.
That's incredible. Love it.
I know.
So let me ask you this. What is the cost to the consumer?
It's free.
It's free.
Yeah. You just go do it now. Yeah.
Does not have to be a subscriber.
Nope. You can go look at it now.
What's the URL? Do you have a separate location?
I think it's touringplanes.com/. Oh, man. It's either touringplanes.com/hotel maps. Let me take a look at it.
Yeah, that's all right. Touringplanes.com. That's where it is.
Yeah.
Get there, you'll get it. So what's the closest room to Yeehaw Bob without actually hearing him so you can sleep?
It is touringplanes.com/hotel_maps.
There you go.
So Yeehaw Bob. Let me see.
So let me mention this while you're looking that up. Lynn was gracious enough to partner with us and the Disney Nerds podcast and the group. If you do subscribe to the site, you do get further out information on the crowd calendar and full access to the Lines app. So he's been gracious enough to give us all of our listeners and member of the group a discount code that if you go to touringplans.com and subscribe, you get a 20% discount for being a fan of the show and a member of the group. And the discount code is 15 nerds. It's 15NERDS.
Awesome.
And you guys can post this in the show notes, but I just sent you guys a link to a particular hotel room at Riverside that I think is pretty close to.
Awesome. I love it.
To Yehobob.
Thank you so much.
30. Did you see it? See the view?
I did not. I want a second.
Click on the link. So this is room 2725. It's a first floor room at Port Orleans Riverside.
Which is right behind it. Yeah.
That's three. Now, the other cool thing you can do is if you don't like that particular view for whatever reason, you can you see there's navigation on the screen in the lower right-hand cool. corner. You can move up a floor, left a room, right a room, and go down. And if you scroll down a little bit more, you can see the in blue the actual text that you need to give to Disney to request that particular room. So building 27, floor 1, southeast-facing room. Southeast facing room, example, 2725, 2726, 2727, so on.
That's awesome.
That's pretty,
that's pretty big data in action is what it is. And you know, when through the day, I'm a technologist, so big data is the topic of everybody, right? Before the show, we were talking about Nest and thermometers and things like that. And I guess my question is, you've been collecting this data from Disney for 15 years. Specifically theme park type data, right? In the
wait times
and crowd calendars, and that's how you're calculating this. Obviously, during that time, we've seen recessions, we've seen economic growth that has to impact crowd calendars, prices. How have all of these changes impacted your data? What has FastPass Plus done for you or not done?
So FastPass Plus done a couple of things. We have indicators in our data. So we track data every day. So every piece of data is tagged down to the minute that we collected it. So if we got something, you know, at 9:41 p.m., you know, today, let's say we picked up a wait time at Space Mountain, we would tag it down to the minute. And along with that, we have this really sophisticated system of identifying different events that happen in Walt Disney World. And one of them is like, for example, let's say Tower of Terror wasn't working today. It was only working at half capacity. We actually have a way of tagging that in our system that says Tower of Terror was only working at half capacity today. So take that into account when you're building your Tower of Terror models going forward. But we've got other indicators for things like the percent of schools that are in session, public schools that are in session east of the Mississippi. But also things like, is this a FastPass Plus attraction? Was it a former FastPass attraction? Did it ever run with both FastPass and FastPass Plus together? Things like that, as well as sort of macroeconomic indicators that we look at too. And we use all of that. It goes into this incredibly complicated model that I cannot pretend to understand. and generally speaking, it works out very, very well. It's the most accurate crowd calendar available. Generally speaking, we're within. We could tell you, for example, pick a given day of the year. We could tell you what the average wait time is going to be at Space Mountain between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. for that day. Generally, plus or minus 8 minutes.
Nice, 8 minutes. Which is eight.
Yeah, and our goal is 5. And for certain attractions, for the easier attractions, for things like Great Movie Ride, Living in the Land, it's probably more like plus or minus 4 minutes, because they don't fluctuate as much. But right. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, and we've had our own discussions about FastPass Plus and how it's affected just Disney in general. And we all felt like maybe it has increased standby lines. Is that what the data supports?
Oh, definitely. So it's done two things. At headliner attractions, it has reduced wait times slightly. There is almost no doubt about that. So wait times at Expedition Everest, at Space Mountain, those are lower than they were under regular FastPass. The thing that it's done, though, is it's increased the waits at your secondary attractions, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dinosaur, Spaceship Earth. Waits are much longer than they used to be. And that's, by the way, that's Disney's intent. They meant for that to happen.
Sure.
Right. What they're trying to do is, imagine you're running a theme park. You want all of your attractions to be utilized at 100% capacity. It would be, from an efficiency perspective, it would be terrible if you had this humongous line for Space Mountain and nobody at Buzz Lightyear, right? Because you're underutilizing Buzz Lightyear. You want everything to be evenly distributed. And that's what FastPass does. So I look at FastPass, like, part of it is like evil genius, right?
Right.
I can hear them laughing right now.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah,
that's true.
If you're running a theme park, you know that Journey into Imagination is not the most popular ride in Epcot, right? But the efficiency part of you, the bookkeepers, the bean counters in your organization, repeatedly point out, we've got to get more than 100 people an hour into Journey into Imagination in order to take some of the pressure off these other attractions. So you make Journey into Imagination a FastPass Plus ride, not because it's immensely popular and needs a ride reservation system, but because you need people to choose that who wouldn't otherwise do so, to get them out of lines at other places in the park. That's exactly what FastPass Plus does. And here's the other thing I think. Here's the other thing I think that's genius, right? FastPass Plus cost Disney $1.5 billion, maybe $2 billion, right?
And counting, right?
Yeah, and counting, right? And yeah, I know the day in which the software developers are done with that is the day that the software developers are done writing programs for anyone, right? Because it's never going to happen. It's like those people's kids will be working on that program. But here's the interesting thing about it, right? $1.5 billion. They're going to make up their money. Supposedly, they were going to make up their money through, improved guest experience, and everyone was just going to love the system so much that they were going to book more and more trips to Disney World. But what they didn't tell you is the bulk of this is going to get paid through operations efficiencies, right? The back of the house stuff. So you're telling Disney, remember when you're making a FastPass Plus, you're telling Disney 60 days in advance, I plan on being at Splash Mountain between 10:30 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. and there will be three other people with me. And I guarantee that that's going to happen because otherwise I will lose this reservation. So Disney takes that information, right? And it takes the information that it's aggregating from all the people who are going to be in the park on that particular day, and it can adjust its staffing models based on that. So all of a sudden, they're not like sending too many people to work in Buzz Lightyear and too few people to work at Splash Mountain. They have a much better idea of what their crowds are going to be like 60 days in advance because you've told them, right? So yeah, they spent $1.5 billion on it. They will make that back in labor savings, I guarantee it, within 5 years.
Evil genius.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, right? I understand why Disney did it, right? And I understand the technology behind it. I'm not even mad at like the technology delays, right? The fact that it took, that this thing was supposed to be done like in 2011 and took till 2013. I'm not fine with that. The thing that irks me just a little bit is they've always sold it as a guest satisfier, when in reality, the bulk of where they're going to make their money back is in staffing efficiencies. If they would have gone to Wall Street and said, look, it's going to be just like the regular FastPass system, but we're going to get these incredible efficiencies in staffing, right? We're not going to be over or under capacity with staffing. We're going to cut our staff waste from 30% to 5%. I could have got behind that, right? Not glamorous, not sexy, not a consumer or anything. But you know, I mean,
no, as a stockholder or an investor, you see it.
You can see that. Yeah, I mean, you're getting the back of the house in order. I can appreciate that, right? But they come out and say, oh, you know, it's guest demand, and you know, we're constantly innovating to exceed our guest expectations. I mean, whose guest expectations were exceeded by FastPass Plus when I first rolled out? No one.
Yeah, not really.
just come out and say, dude, this is what we're doing, and this is why, you know, and hopefully we'll get some technology out of it. You know,
I mean, I kind of see some benefits of it, and we've discussed this on the show before. I kind of see the point that, you know what, 60 days before my trip, I can go on to Disney system. And if I've got a 6-year-old daughter and the number one thing they want to do is meet Anna and Elsa or whatever it may be.
And you could do it 60 days in advance and you can sleep in that
booked,
day.
I know what's going to happen. Done. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to get there at rope drop and run for a fast pass.
It's true.
So it's true. I get that part of it as well.
Here's the thing. Is that $1.5 billion?
No, probably not.
I mean, dude, you could have printed those things out 60 days in advance, right? And then just you could have dropped them off at your hotel and said, here are your three fast passes, go.
$1.5 billion, you could have Anna and Elsa's walking all over the place.
Yeah, right.
So yeah.
I get it. That is actually a pretty big benefit of FastPass Plus.
One of the things I've seen, interesting, Len, and you've probably—I know that you've seen it—is the going back and retrofitting attractions to have FastPass Plus. And I think that one of the reasons Jimmy asked the question, is it faster or not? We on the show have many times, specifically Ed, pointed to Pirates of the Caribbean.
And
the fact that it has completely messed up the standby.
So have you guys heard my story about this?
No, yeah. I want to hear it.
Apparently not.
Oh, man. So Pirates of the Caribbean is where Bob and I stood one day to figure out what was wrong with FastPass Plus.
Okay, then we're not crazy. Something's broken in that attraction.
So this was last year, last May, you know, and we're looking at it and we're trying to figure out, you know, why the lines had gone up. And so we spent some time standing at the FastPass Plus return point. So, you know, where the Plaza del Sol is sort of the FastPass return point sort of starts right there or did at the time.
Yeah, they moved Goofy and put it right there.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it was the most amazing experience for a couple of reasons. One is just in terms of like operational efficiency. It took us like, let's see, we got there probably at 9. It took us a solid 2 minutes to figure out how screwed up that was. And then we started, but then we started seeing some really interesting things. So one of the things that we realized right at the top is the way that they had one cast member scanning the fast passes, right? So you guys know there's two Mickey, there's the two sort of posts, right, that you touch, the touch
yep.
points.
Yeah.
But they had one cast member there sort of regulating it, and another cast member was sort of farther down the line. And invariably what would happen is somebody would walk up to the touch points, their bands wouldn't scan, and the cast member would at that point start to diagnose what the problem was. And for an attraction like Pirates of the Caribbean, where you're getting maybe 3,000 people an hour, 2,800, whatever, that's roughly one person coming up to that touch point every 3 seconds.
Wow.
So if you've got to start diagnosing problems and explaining it to people, you know, in 30 seconds, and you cannot, I'm telling you, you cannot diagnose a damn thing in 30 seconds.
Right.
Right. In 30 seconds, 10 people are in line behind you, right? In a minute, it's 20 people. And that's what we would see. People would come up, they wouldn't, you know, they would forget what time their reservation was because it's not displayed anywhere, right? It's not displayed. It's not like there's an alert on your cell phone that tells you what it is. It's not printed anywhere on your magic band. There's no nothing, right?
Right.
They'd forget. They'd be off by 5 minutes. They'd be 5 minutes too early. They'd be 5 minutes too late. And that would cause a line. Or you would get, and this is classic, people whose first language isn't English.
Yes.
And they're just confused about the entire system. But you know the really amazing thing? We're standing there, right? We're sort of near where we could hear what the cast member was saying. We started to hear other people try and explain what they thought FastPass was. And that was really cool. So this Japanese couple came up. And so there are lots of ways you could implement a ride reservation system. This Japanese couple explained that they thought that on your Magic Band were loaded three, let's call them wishes. And whenever you touched your Magic Band to a touch point, one of your wishes went away and you could get into that line automatically. Now, granted, that's not how FastPass works, but that's a perfectly reasonable assumption about how a ride reservation system might work, right?
Sure.
And Disney didn't do it that way, but you know they obviously spoke very limited English. This took probably I think 7 or 8 minutes for them to figure out. And meanwhile, there's no other cast member other than this one cast member trying to figure out what's going on. And now the line's like all the way down to like you know Tortuga Tavern, right? I mean the line to get in is just incredibly huge.
People are getting mad at this point.
Yeah, and because it never used to happen, right? With FastPass, the old FastPass system, you just took a ticket, half the time people would look at it, and you were done.
Yeah,
but that was you know really really interesting to figure out what went wrong with it. And I actually did a blog post on this for Disney, and I said here's how you redesign the entrance point so that this doesn't happen. And my version, you had two cast members, and if something went wrong, you sort of moved the people that needed to be dealt with to sort of a recovery point, like a few feet away, and then just let everyone else keep going. So you had one cast member dealing with sort of the regular entrance traffic and answering questions. And then another cast member dealing with sort of the odd things that would happen.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, and it was like, this is how you get rid of the problem. But even today, I mean, you'll see a 20-minute line to get in at Space Mountain. You know, if things go incredibly wrong, you know, which again they're getting millions of people a week through the turnstiles.
Toy Story Mania is classic too. Same thing.
And Toy Story Mania is so bad because the capacity is so low. I think it's like 1,000 people an hour. I mean, now they're going to build it out, but. But that'll only get them to like 1,600, 1,700 maybe. But you know, again, so many people are coming in so fast that if you take a minute to do this, Soren's another classic example. There's nothing you could do. The line's just going to build. So they've got to do something there with that. But I've heard that in some instances, like you guys have probably seen this at like Kilimanjaro Safaris. They actually only ask one member of your party to scan their bracelets and everyone else gets to walk through. Have you seen this happen?
I've experienced that.
I can tell you, me, my son, and my daughter were going on to Mission Space, and for some reason my daughter's Magic Band wouldn't work.
Yep.
And we legitimately had a fast pass reservation for all three of us, and they didn't even hesitate just to wave her through.
Yeah, bing. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to – there's no fraud there. Yeah, so at Kilimanjaro Safaris, if the line gets too long and it starts backing up into Harambe, they'll actually tell you only one member of your party needs to scan the magic band and then just wave everybody through.
But that would typically be at the first point, right? Not the second one?
At the first point, yeah.
Right.
So they'll do that, and then you can just go on from there. But I can't remember whether they made us do it at the second point again. I don't think they did, actually, on the safaris. But anyway, I mean there are issues that they have to work through. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean that makes complete sense. I mean you're not going to set who's going to set a fast pass for themselves at an attraction and not the rest of their fan.
But people actually do it for Anna and Elsa. When you can't get, let's say you're a family of four and you can only get two reservations.
Yeah. So they just drag the people along with them?
No, what they'll do is they'll just send their kids into Anna and Elsa. They'll send Disney actually requires now that to redeem a fast pass, one member of the party has to be at least 14.
Ah, makes sense.
So because people were just sending their 6-year-olds in to meet Anna and Elsa. And that line's it could potentially be 45 minutes long, and you can't have 2 6-year-olds sitting in a line for 45 minutes unsupervised.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, I waited for 90 minutes one time to see them in World. I waited 5 hours in Land.
Are you kidding?
No, it's actually my daughter wanted to see it, and she's 15, so I could have talked her out of it. But yeah, I've had a relationship.
Or sent her on her own, I guess.
Yeah, I know, right? God bless. Yeah.
No, so in World, was that still at Epcot, or is that at Fairytale Hall, or where was that you waited?
It was at Fairytale Hall. It was over the 24-hour period, but it was at midnight. So you would think the line would have died down, but no, it didn't. I got to say, too, it was completely fabulous. It's the best character experience in Walt Disney World. If you ask my daughter, Hannah, if she would wait again for 90 minutes to see them, she would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, that's good. That's why you do it, then.
Yeah, exactly. It was great.
When we were there, we happened to all be down, me, Sam, Ed, Jennifer. We were all there this past October, and we walked by, and it was like 320-minute wait.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
Standby, not fast pass, but that was standby wait.
Yeah, still 5 hours. I mean, five hours and 20 minutes. It's you're gonna do that. You're gonna eat. You're gonna go home and go to bed. That's pretty much it for the day.
So you spent $10 an hour, like you were saying, per person in your party to stand to meet. That's insane.
So it was funny when we were in Disneyland because mostly the kids stood there, and the parents took turns doing other things like. 1 hour, it was my turn to go get the drinks and the snacks. So I did, for all the people around us. And then, somebody else brought in, brownies or whatever. I went and got Ticker Tales and bottles of water. But, everyone just had to support everyone else. Because, I mean, you're not gonna wait in 5 hours and not go to the bathroom, right? And you're also you're not gonna be the guy that says, no, you've been waiting for 3 hours, but you left to go to the bathroom, so now you've lost your place in line. I mean, that's just not gonna happen.
No, I agree.
So, everyone's got to cooperate. And we did. It was kind of cool. And it was a great experience. So.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it wasn't bad at all.
So, as you go through some of these algorithms, I know that the Lines app supports Disneyland and other parks, too. What's been some of the, obviously FastPass Plus is affected Walt Disney World, but we're still in the original FastPass system out in Disneyland with the paper ticket still. So, what are you hearing there? Is Disneyland eventually going to join?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. If you would have asked me this question last year, I would have said it was going to be inevitable. But now I'm not so sure. I'd probably put the odds at, the odds are probably still better that they're going to do it. If they don't, if Disney does not move FastPass Plus to Disneyland, it's an admission that the system that they wrote is broken, right? That they've spent $1.5 billion, and that $1.5 billion is essentially, it's just customized for Disney World. But if they do it, then, I would expect it to go worldwide. I've already told, so we have a guy whose job it is to be in Disneyland every day. His name is Guy, actually. You can follow him on Twitter, Guy Selga.
Not a bad gig. You have to go to Disneyland every day.
We have a guy. His name is Guy.
His guy, right?
And I told him, like, the day that they announce that My Magic Plus is coming to Disneyland, I need to be in Anaheim to watch the people coming with the pitchforks and the torches.
It's completely different environment. It's more of a local type park. I mean, they're not going to take it well.
Yeah, that's it. Stuff will get real in a hurry when that happens.
Yeah.
And yeah, because people think that that's their personal park, and it is, right? It's their neighborhood park. A lot of them grew up there and go every day.
Sure.
It's completely different than Walt Disney World.
Absolutely.
But the day that you say, you know, you've got to make a fast pass reservation 60 days in advance, even if you live down the street. I can't.
Yeah, it's going to be.
I can't wrap my head around what that reaction is going to be.
It's not. I agree. I agree 100%. Yeah. It's not going to be good because it's just a total different idea there.
Yeah. But, we got that covered. We support Universal Express in it, too. When you think about it, it's all a reservation, right? There's slightly different complexities with them in Disneyland. Now you've got to actually go pick up a paper fast pass in World. You don't technically have to for your first three, but you do for your fourth, right? Because you got to go to a kiosk, so it's kind of similar. In Universal, you don't have to do any of that. They're sort of all, pre-booked when you get your Universal Express pass.
Right.
So there's different ways of handling that, but we supported FastPass Plus even before all the Disney parks did. We had a little bit of lead time. We kind of knew in advance that it was coming and how it would work.
By the way, for anyone going down to do anything on the My Disney Experience, I would recommend going to a kiosk.
Yeah,
the app in the park is just terrible.
It's really interesting. We did a side by side comparison of lines every year. We sort of review our app to make sure where we're at.
Sure.
Compared to Disney, and one of the things that we did with lines this year was, we showed you on one screen all of the fast passes available in a park for all the attractions for all the times. So if you go into lines right now, you can see, like for today, all the fast passes that are left for every attraction in the park on one screen.
Wow.
And then I tried to do that in My Disney Experience, and it took me 17 screens to figure out Buzz Lightyear, and then I gave up. I was like, I'm done. I can't.
Oh, and it moves so slow. I was asking the cast member, I'm like, what is going on? And their only answer is like, well, the kiosks are hardwired.
Yeah, it's getting better. Yeah,
getting better?
Slowly but surely. I mean, I think they still have usability issues with it, but I mean, like, we have our own app, we have our own usability issues. I kind of understand it. The thing that I keep coming back to is $1.5 billion.
It's like, a lot of money.
For $1.5 billion, there should be an artificial brain, dude.
It should be telling you what to do next.
So
yeah.
I can see what we have so far, right, as of February of 2015, but there were so many promises that aren't there yet. So many things that, I don't know if they were promises from Disney, things we heard in podcast communities, look at all this stuff you're going to be able to do at home, and this is going to tie into this interactive queue or that one. Are there still things we don't know about?
You'll get automated, you'll get in advance dining this year, I think, at some point. They tested it with Be Our Guest. You'll be able to order your meal 60 days in advance and pick that up at Be Our Guest. And probably some other places too, because there's operational efficiencies there. Yeah, but the thing with the queues, man. But so here's what I heard, and I don't know how true this is, so take it with a grain of salt. But what I heard was they spent so much money on software development that there's literally no money left over to do any of the really wow, fantastic things, the personalization things. So if you look at it, you guys were there in October. Did you happen to go through the Space Mountain post-show scene?
Yeah, I'm sure we did. Yes.
Yes.
So did you notice that there were instances on those TV monitors now where it looks like it was like your head on top of like a guy in a spacesuit,
as opposed to just you in a green screen
On a TV? Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
I didn't notice it. No.
So it's there. So they've added these personalization elements to Space Mountain. So eventually, when they add the sensors that read your Magic Band information, they'll be able to display things like your name, Captain Sam, Captain Jimmy, or Commander Jimmy from Space Mountain.
I like that.
And they could do that, right? So they need a couple of touch points. They need some technology to do some lookups. They need some video software to render the names and stuff like that. But that's doable, right?
Tie that in the Memory Maker and attach a photo of you with some type of caption like that in your Memory Maker.
Exactly, and they can do that. Memory Maker's already tied into things like Tower of Terror and Splash Mountain using your Magic Band.
That's incredible, by the way.
Yeah, and they could do it at Space Mountain, right? They've got the video projection technology where they could put your face and your name on dolls and things like that. But what I heard was it took so much money for the software development, the $1.5 billion, that there was literally no money left over for anything else. That's why the new Peter Pan interactive queue, why it took an extra year to get done. They literally didn't have any more money for it because it all went to My Magic Plus.
I think we actually talked about that, Sam, while we were in line for Peter Pan in October. We were actually talking about how they ran out of money.
Yep, and it waited. It just languished there. And, you know, some of the stuff, like Haunted Mansion, we kind of got the post-show gift shop that the thing is always needed, right? So have you guys seen Memento?
Yeah, absolutely. The door was unlocked before it opened, and a couple of us might have
peeked in,
fallen in.
when we were there, like, I think it opened the next day.
Well, it was open for the Halloween parties only when it first opened, and we happened to be there.
Open for the Halloween party, but we were not there for Halloween party, and if there's a door that may be open, Sam is always willing to open it.
Or fall in or lean against it.
Unsuspecting tourist. What do you guys think of it?
I think it's fantastic. Haunted Mansion is great. Probably my favorite my favorite attraction. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I like it a lot too. The thing I didn't see in there was any sort of personalization gift that came out of the Haunted Mansion itself. There's those photos that you can get of yourself, but that's local to the gift shop. I'm a little surprised they didn't do that, given that Mansion's had its My Magic Plus stuff for a long time. But maybe that's coming, you know, soon.
Did it just go through a recent refurbishment?
It goes through one every 6 months because the Imagineers like to work on it, apparently.
I was hoping for the Hitchhiking Ghost at the end to get that as part of Memory Maker.
That's what I hear. That's what it's going to be.
Good.
And it'll be a video, actually.
Perfect. It just makes sense.
Photo. That'll be, yeah, and you'll be able to download the video to one of those picture frames.
And just
show it over and over again. Yeah, I know. And that's, I mean, I'd pay $20 for that, right?
Yeah.
I would definitely pay $20
for that. Would you pay $50? Because they're listening.
I would pay $20 for that, definitely.
By the way, the only reason they would be listening is because Lynn Tesla's name came up. They ain't listening to us. I'll tell you right now.
So here's... Sorry.
No, that's it. That's, you know, we'll see. I mean, you got another year. You really, if you look at it, there's really no attraction going in this year or next year, right? I mean, maybe this is where they're spending their money on you know, those scene ones and the post-show stuff.
Probably expansion.
So speaking of expansion, has with New Fantasyland being there now, mm-hmm. you know, a year or so, how has that impacted the other attractions? Do you think they got what they expected as far as some people eaters? Is it what they wanted?
Yeah, I think Under the Sea definitely is. Mine Train, you know, is what, 1,500 people an hour, 1,800 people an hour, something like that.
Nice.
Under the Sea is like close to 3,000. So I think they got capacity of around 4,000 or 5,000 people an hour. You know, when everything is said and done, not counting the Dumbo and the Barnstormer thing that they had, which is good. I mean, New Fantasyland was there just to add capacity to the Magic Kingdom. I mean, they're averaging 51,000 people a day in the park. They needed the capacity. It's not about, you know, trying to compete with Harry Potter or anything like that. This was literally just to expand the parks for additional capacity. So,
that makes sense.
And they did that. Yeah.
So you said Dumbo real quick. Let me go back a second. When you do some of the touring plans, are you taking mm-hmm. into account some of these interactive cues? Say, for example, I want to set aside 20 minutes to allow the kids to run around in the Dumbo Interactive Playground before we ride.
Or is that where you would just optimize? And the reason we asked is because our last show was actually on interactive queue. So and you know, the movement by Disney to have all these queues interactive.
Yeah, definitely. There's a couple of things you can do. We haven't set aside time specifically to play in the interactive queues. There's a couple of ways you can handle it, though. In the short term, you could always create a little break in the touring plan, before or after the step, and just say, I'm going to spend 10 minutes playing in the Dumbo interactive queue, which is pretty fabulous, by the way. But in an upcoming release, we're going to allow you to change the duration of the ride to whatever you want. So if you want to spend an extra 10 minutes in it, you can.
So the app will tell you how long the actual duration is, and then you can adjust from there.
This is a 7-minute limited experience, and you know, for example, there's an interactive queue and you're going to spend 10 minutes in there. So you go from 7 to 17, and we'll handle it. It also works out for things like, when we think about things like World Showcase countries, there's enormous variability in how much time people spend. And that's why we're doing it, for things like that.
That makes complete sense. Yep, you know, I'm thinking queues, but no, I just want to spend a little more time in Germany because of whatever.
Japan, the sake bar.
You know, you really like the post show games at Mission Space. You want to spend 20 minutes playing that. That's fine. Go ahead and do it. And we'll be able to optimize it just like it's a regular attraction. So, yeah, the sake bar is actually kind of funny. I don't know why they haven't expanded that. It's tiny.
Oh, yes, no, it's little bitty. It's
they don't let you keep the cup anymore. I'm disappointed. You used to get
Yeah, it was a little cheap plastic cup that they give you now.
It's $2. Just go buy the cup.
Yeah, just buy a cup,
I'd rather buy the $7 bottle of sake and just drink that.
Yeah, that's true, but think about all the bars that have gone up in World Showcase. I mean, hell,
the tequila bar, yeah.
Really? There's new bars? I haven't noticed.
Yeah, right?
You're right.
But, but the sake bar, why hasn't that...
Why hasn't it grown?
Yeah, I'm amazed. Because if you think about all the different, all the different snacks that you could do, I really thought for sure that Japan was going to get a seaside... or a lagoon side bar before
Morocco.
Before Morocco.
Yeah.
So is the purpose of the sake bar in the pavilion to have people sit there and have drinks, or is it to have you try sake that they sell you off the wall? To sell you the bottle. You know what I mean?
No, it's definitely there to get you to buy the bottle. That's a good question. Is it the bottle or not? You know, any other location, I'm saying they're just selling drinks. But because it's in a department store, it might be the bottle,
And that's what I'm thinking, because it is so small, and hey, come here, spend a couple bucks, try this sake, let me show it to you, this is what you're drinking, it's available right here, buy a bottle with you when you leave.
Yeah, and the bottles aren't that expensive, right? I mean, they're all under like $40, $50, right?
Yeah,
there were some that were, I'm not sure if it was sake or turpentine, but it was really cheap.
That was actually my first, I was with Sam, and... we actually recorded some show audio, and it was my first time ever drinking.
That's why we went there. I said, have you ever been to the sake bar? What sake bar? Let's go.
Yeah. So I went, I told that you're going to like this, Lynn. I'm talking to the girl, and I told her konnichiwa. She says, oh, you know, they barely speak any English. She's like, oh, where'd you learn your Japanese? I said, Karate Kid.
Really?
I said, you know, Mr. Miyagi? It was terrible. But
she had no idea how to react.
Me and Sam were drunk already.
We were a few drinks in at that point.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd be shocked that if Disney didn't add more bars. I think they could do a ton over at Germany, like a beer garden.
Sure. Table. What's your go-to Spice location?
Table is just... Oh, I mean, we have an office set up at La Cava. I mean, come on.
La Cava. Okay. All right. I wasn't sure. Mine's over at Tutto Gusto.
Yeah, Tutto Gusto is actually not bad. I think they screwed up the menu a little bit with the price increases. But I really like La Cava. I like the people there. I like the amount of thought that they put into their tequila selections. You know, it feels like home to me, and it doesn't hurt that I actually have a customized tequila glass there.
Oh, no way.
Really? Come on.
Next to Neil Patrick Harris's. Thank you very much.
Nice.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And they're people I know go back to Tequila, Mexico. They've got a tequila expert. Her name is Hilda. She's actually from Jalisco, from the town of Tequila
That's
Mexico.
Cool.
They are super knowledgeable about it. Yeah, I really like all their stuff.
You were talking about you know, adding more bars there. And I, before Sam so rudely interrupted, I brought up Spice Road Table.
I don't know what's going on there, man. You know, I have my own theory. Have you guys eaten there?
Yes.
Sam, I've drank there. I've never eaten there.
What'd you think of the food?
Some of it was good. I had the two, they have those two different samplers, which I thought was the way to go because it just seemed so expensive to get an individual appetizer. So I got the sampler. The little lamb slider wasn't bad. Some of the other things, not my taste, but the slider was good.
Have you ever been to Tangerine Cafe?
Only for desserts.
I've been to Tangerine Cafe.
Okay, and what do you think of Tangerine Cafe?
I think it I think it's fine. I think it's fantastic.
Okay. And Restaurant Marrakesh?
I have been to Restaurant Marrakesh. That food is a little bit different, and when we talk about it on the podcast, I always try and explain that restaurant. I actually have a friend. I work for my day job is I'm a branch manager at a large retail bank, and I have a friend who's a business banker who is from Morocco. Actually, Disney recruited him from Morocco to work in the Moroccan pavilion.
Really?
Yeah, and so that's how he ended up moving to this country and met his wife. Now both of them live in New Orleans. His wife's from New Orleans, and that he met his wife while working at Disney. So,
oh, that's a great story.
So talking to him, he actually worked there in retail, and you know, just from many conversations with him, the food in Marrakesh is actually Moroccan food. Tangerine Cafe is more Middle Eastern food.
Yep. 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 So the I like Tangerine Cafe quite a bit. It's actually one of the highest rated counter service restaurants by the unofficial guide readers.
Really?
In the book every year. Yeah, I mean like above 90%.
Yeah, we've gone eating like the shawarma plates and stuff like that.
Shawarma is just delicious.
Yeah, I've never had a bad meal there.
I think the thing that Spice Road Table is dealing with is this. Imagine you're making, you're choosing dishes, Moroccan dishes for a restaurant. Okay, but before you choose the dishes, two other restaurants get to pick the best Moroccan dishes before you. Right. And the thing that you're left with is anything that they don't want. That's essentially what happened to Spice Road Table.
Which is why they expanded beyond just Moroccan, right? It's the whole Spice Row.
So, I mean, that's why they serve beer. That's why it's, I mean, essentially it's Southern Mediterranean, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
There's some dishes that are Spain. There's some, Yeah.
And a lot of, I mean, lamb sliders you're not going to find anywhere in the Middle Eastern. I mean, there's no such thing, right?
Right.
But it's an interpretation. It's a taste. It's a flavor. I get it.
It's a shame because the place is beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's expensive.
Yeah.
And again, you're left with the things that the other restaurants didn't want to do. If you move the Tangerine Cafe menu over to Spice Road Table, I guarantee you that you'd get more people.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But how do you fix that, right? Because if you think about it, when you go to the Tangerine Cafe manager and you say, "Sorry, bub, you know you got to take one for the team here." No, he's going to quit.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. You can't do that to people. And you can't go to Restaurant Marrakesh. I mean, first of all, Restaurant Marrakesh is probably one of the last restaurants to fill up in World Showcase for dinner. So I don't know how much demand you're going to get there. But even then, you're going to tell the guy from Restaurant Marrakesh, okay, we're going to take all your most popular dishes. You can't serve them anymore. We're going to serve them over at Spice Road Table. Or we're going to serve them all at Spice Road Table, even though we serve them here, but we're going to charge less so we can get more people in. What do you do, right?
Is Spice Road Table owned by Disney?
No, third-party management.
Same as Marrakesh? Is it all managed by one party?
I believe all of Morocco is third-party managed. I think it's Morocco, Mexico, and there's one other country, I think.
Italy?
I don't remember. I think it might be Italy because I think it might be Italy. There might be one more too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's third party management and you kind of understand the third party management people I think are generally a little bit better, better running those things. But I think they're in the case of Morocco, their hands are tied.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, Mexico pulled it off with La Hacienda, right? Because they have, think about it, they have San Angel Inn inside the pavilion.
Right.
Yeah. And they came up with a completely different menu for La Hacienda, and it's more upscale.
And it works.
I think the thing is that people are more familiar with that type, you know, Americans are more familiar with that type of food. You know, when it comes to Middle Eastern food, we think, oh, gyro, shawarma.
Yeah,
falafel. That's about as far as it gets, you know.
Yeah,
once you go up past that, it's like I don't know what this is.
Yeah, when you have like the pumpkin soup or the brewer rolls or something like that, you're beyond the comfort zone of a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I get it, but I don't know what they can do there. I don't. It's really a mystery. I mean, for me, I think it's almost like having to reboot the franchise. Like if this was a movie franchise, you would reboot and start over. On it, and I don't know, but it's a great location, and I love the pavilion itself.
I was gonna say the Spice Road Table is a great place to just go grab a drink and sit by the windows, and
I don't know, maybe they turn it into a you know, a dessert party exclusive something. I don't know. Maybe they moved all the baklava out there. Who knows?
Right.
So over in World Showcase, anything happening at the Odyssey building? It's being used here recently, and I love getting back in that building.
We did a WDW Today reunion show there a couple of years back. It's a lot of fun. No, I haven't heard anything there. I know that. I mean, obviously, you guys know that Illuminations is going away in October, right?
No.
We figured it may be, but I didn't know that soon.
Breaking news.
Yeah, it's like telling people that Santa Claus isn't real, man.
Yeah, I don't know. That's terrible. People freaked out when they said Maelstrom was going away. They really freak out on this one.
Well, I want to know what's coming in its place here.
Oh. So, new musical, I mean, fireworks, laser spectacular, new music, new effects.
With the show enabled, I'm sure.
Dude, don't do that to me. That's not cool.
Well, that's when I figured it was. It's a good topic, though, but that's when I figured Illumination's days are numbered because there was no investment from that perspective. But are those years even there still?
Over at Fantasmic, yeah, I think they are, but it's not something that caught on, so.
No, because it's $30 for a pair of ears.
Yeah, it's kind of like
that.
The
only works in Disney World.
Yeah, it's not something that's caught on. Yeah, but Illuminations goes away end of September, so if you want to see it this year.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Well, me and Sam will be down in 20 days.
Yeah, that'll be fun. We'll make sure we see it.
We're doing a Disney Nerds podcast monorail crawl.
How long are you guys staying until?
We will be. Sam's only going down for one day.
Really?
Yeah. I was going down with the family, and Sam's like, you know, and then Jennifer, one of our other co-hosts, she's going down there for whatever.
The marathon. It's Princess Marathon weekend.
Yeah, that's the end of the week of the 16th, right? So
yeah, we'll so that weekend, the 21, 22.
Is the night of the meet, and Sam's like, hey, I think I can make it down there, so.
That's awesome.
He's coming to join us. So we're gonna start at Narcoozie's and do a monorail crawl.
Ah, Narcoozie's is a great bar. Great bartenders there.
We're very excited. I've never been to Narcoozie's, so.
So the bartenders there have been there like, you know, 10 years each. It's a good gig to get, you know, calm clientele, you know, upscale place. Those guys have been there.
At least it was an upscale place till the
Solid. Where are you guys staying when you're doing this monorail crawl?
I will be at Caribbean Beach.
You're not driving or anything like that, right?
No.
Probably. I've got a.
Oh, just get a cab.
Yeah, I've got a 15-year-old daughter. Drive us back to the room.
Okay, so you're set then. That's fine.
Yeah. I've got designated driver. Sam, have you been call to a cab and tell him he's going to the airport and then say, psych.
No, that's only when you're leaving Riverside at 2:00 in the morning and trying to get back to the Swan and have no idea how to do it.
Cab drivers do not.
Last time we were down there, we had a big event.
So the cab driver's like, no, we're not coming to get you from Riverside and bringing you the Swan. I'm not making the $6 trip. So Sam goes to the front desk and tells him, hey, I need a ride to the airport. So they send the taxi cab driver, and he gets in and goes, hey, man, I need to go to the Swan.
Just to pick something up and then just leave.
Have
you guys been to Top of the World Lounge at Bailey Town? Okay, cool.
Yes. Sam has taken us twice. My last two trips, Sam has been there, and he's a DVC member, and we've...
Nice. I had a car strategically located in the Epcot Resort area. We watched Illuminations and literally sprinted to the car so that we can get the Bay Lake for Wishes.
Did you really?
We did it. Yeah, we did it. 9:00 Illuminations, 10:00 Wishes. Let's go.
Have you guys had the Moscow Mule at Top of the World?
No.
I always go with like the blue line or the red line.
Yeah, I had like the monorail yellow or something.
Yeah, something like that.
No. So they've actually got these pewter glasses that they serve it in. So it's vodka, ginger, beer, and lime, garnished with lime. But it's copper or pewter that they serve the mugs in. But the funny thing is people keep stealing the mugs.
Oh no!
So they're down to like three of them. So like somebody will actually watch you drink the drink.
Love it.
Len, have you had a Carl's combo?
I've not. What is it?
So at the Rose and Crown, there's a guy. He's a bartender there. He's been there like since opening. His name's Carl.
Carl.
And we went in there. I went in there a few years ago and said, look, I wasn't really a big, you know, other than Miller Lite, Bud Light, every now and then a Nabita Purple Haze. So, you know, I went in there and said, hey, what would you recommend? I want to try something different. He said, man, he told us the whole story, Carl's Combo. So it's Stella Artois and Bass.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's on the menu as a golden, but he's like, they want to call it a golden on the menu, but I invented it, so I call it a Carl's Combo. I said, well, with you, Carl, I'm calling it a Carl's Combo too. So
that's fine.
Introduced that drink to you. I think everyone who's gone with me since it's fantastic.
It's like a black and tan, but it's a tan and tan.
Yeah, and it doesn't stack because they're too close to the same.
Yeah.
In fact, they pour them at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was a mistake because the taps are right next to each other, and I think somebody pulled two back, but that's it's still good. Whatever.
Carl, sharks, probably Carl.
It works.
That's fantastic.
So next time you're in Walt Disney World, definitely. Stop by the Rose and Crown and get a Carl's Combo.
I will. I will definitely do that. You guys have done Drink Around the World before?
Well, we drank partially around the world.
We never make it all the way.
It's so hard to make it all the way.
It's a miserable, grueling experience.
You have to start small drinks. But the problem with small drinks is they tend to be higher alcohol content.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you start? So here's the classic question: do you start in Canada or start in Mexico?
I started in the UK one time, and I made it all the way to Japan.
Which is a little more than half.
I don't remember anything after that. I woke up with a $200 sushi bill back in my hotel room, fully clothed on the bed, face down, $200 bill for sushi. I don't remember eating the sushi or getting back to my room. Don't remember any of it.
The last time we were there, we were in Rose and Crown, and they had a bridal party in there, and they had their shirts on while they were marking off the countries, and they were in the Rose and Crown doing Irish car bombs, and I'm thinking, there's no possible way. They're not going to make it through three countries.
No, forget it.
I'm from New Orleans. We drink, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's in our blood. So, but
literally, it's in our blood.
Literally, all the time.
I've got the police report to prove it.
Right. Unfortunately.
So, Len, thanks so much for joining us. This is incredible. And there's a question that I have to ask, which is usually the first question that we ask guests. And that's, what makes you a Disney nerd? What started your interest to start a thesis project that ends up turning into Touring Plans? What was it that sparked it for you?
All right, so I'll give you two stories. So the actual story of the thesis was I was in line for 2 hours at Grace Movie Ride with my sister, and I thought that, my God, there's got to be a better way. But and I came back and asked my professors to look at it, and it ended up being, they sent me to the library for a couple of days. It ended up being an incredibly complicated problem, But I fell in love with Disney. Like everyone, like I'm sure your grandparents moved to Florida when you were younger. Everyone's grandparents moved to Florida. Mine did in 72. So in 74, when I was living in Ohio, they took my twin sister and I to World. So we were six at the time in 74. And I remember distinctly, I remember going into Pirates of the Caribbean. And you know they've got the light bulbs that flicker like it's really a candle.
Yep, sure.
And I noticed it, and even though I was 6 years old, I realized that not only was this not a candle, but somebody had to design a light bulb to look like a candle. And I remember just sitting there looking at that and thinking to myself, if they put that much detail and that much effort into a light bulb, what is the rest of this place, right? Like, I mean, it's a light bulb. A thousand people before me just walked by it without even looking at it. But they put that much thought and that much effort into making sure this light bulb was right. What is the rest of this place? And I was, so Pirates of the Caribbean, and it's not everyone's favorite attraction. It's always been in my top three for sentimental reasons because of that. Right then is sort of where I can mark, you know, this is where I really fell in love with Disney World. I know that Pirates of the Caribbean is not, in Walt Disney World, is not the best version of Pirates of the Caribbean. I don't care. I still love it. Right.
No, I
sentimentally, it means a lot to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was it. Yeah.
To be honest with you, I mean, I think that's a lot of people's first memory. Like mine is the in Pirates of the Caribbean, the pirate's leg hanging over the bridge with the hair on it. And that's it's like, good God, if they put that much thought into it, into that one little piece.
So funny story. I'll give you another pirate story. So we're doing my house, right? The one with the Space Mountain kitchen, and the electricians are going through the house and they're routing, wires for the screens and all this other stuff. And one of the electricians finally realizes what we do for a living. And he's like, okay, I'm going to hook you guys up. We have this little cubby hole on on a wall opposite our fireplace in the living room. And we don't know what it does. It's some sort of vent and it's got a grate on it, but it's vertical, right? So it's in the middle of the wall.
Hmm.
And the wall is only like 3 feet wide. And we call this thing the squirrel jail because it's probably big enough that you could put a squirrel in there and put this grate back over. So this dude rigs up, like in Pirates of the Caribbean when you're going through and the town is on fire.
Yeah.
And you see the fire. And what the fire really is it's some silk sheets, some orange and red lighting underneath, and a blower motor. That's how they do it. This dude rigged up that effect in our living room fireplace cubby hole.
And sweet.
I know. And we have a little light switch that turns it on and off. But then we did, we got some enchanted tiki room statues and put them in there. So at night, the electrician set up these red and orange LEDs that flicker. So it looks like fire at night. And it's super cool. But so not only do we all love Pirates of the Caribbean, but our electrician in Greensboro, North Carolina, loves Pirates of the Caribbean too. So he hooked up this little tribute for us. It's really kind of cool.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really kind of neat.
Len, thank you so much for coming up on the show. You've been more than gracious with your time. I know it's getting late where you are.
Thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
We'll definitely have to plan something in the future to get you back on, but we really appreciate it. It's been a great time talking to you.
Yeah, let me know the next time you guys are down. If we if our schedules hook up, we'll get together and grab a drink somewhere.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Len.
Thank you.
Good night.
Night.
Well, that's it for show number 70, guys. Thanks for listening. And a big thanks goes out to Len Testa for coming on the show with us. A lot of good information, Len. We really appreciate it. And we're going to have to all keep our ears open about the Illuminations, too. We'll see when that happens. And don't forget to visit touringplans.com. If you want to get in touch with the show, please send us an email at thedisneynerds@yahoo.com. We also have our two Facebook pages. We have the Disney Nerds podcast page and the Disney Nerds group page. So come on by, stop in, and check out what's going on. You can catch up on older shows over at our webpage, thedisneynerdspodcast.com. Again, thank you for listening. For Jen, Jimmy, Sam, this is Ed, and we'll see you next week. Tungaloosh!
Mortals pay a token fee, rest in